joining me today. Got a very great and interesting show for you. The beginning of the Sweet 16 tips off today, so there's going to be some good college games. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about James Harden surging and getting hot at the right moment and leading the Rockets to being one of the best teams in the Western Conference. And we'll also talk about that great game last night between the Miami Heat and the Indiana Pacers. That one went down to the wire, and that's a future potential Eastern Conference final matchup later on. So we'll talk about that. But, of course, it's Thursday, so, you know, it's college basketball. March Madness is continuing, and the Sweet 16 tips off today. There's some four good games today, and let's talk about those. The first one that is on today that starts at 4:15, the first game today, is the number 11 seed Dayton playing the number 10 seed Stanford. And these are the two teams that have been, you know, busting everybody's brackets. These are the two teams no one saw coming, that no one expected to be here. And it's going to be a good game. Dayton, you know, they've knocked off Ohio State in the first round with a one-point win. Everyone was talking about them. And then they knocked off Syracuse, the three-seed Syracuse. So that's how they got here. And then Stanford got here by knocking off New Mexico, who a lot of people had New Mexico as a team that was going to make a deep run. But Stanford knocked them off in the first round. And then Stanford knocked off Andrew Wiggins and the Kansas Jayhawks. So these are the two, I don't want to say Cinderella teams, but these are the two underdog teams that are still in the tournament, including Tennessee. But Stanford and Dayton are the two teams that everyone are considering the Cinderella teams. And this is going to be a good game because they both play the same way, and they both have two big weaknesses. For example, if Dayton wants to win this game, Dayton needs to pressure Stanford full court. That's what Stanford's weakness is. Stanford's weakness is getting sped up. And I was watching the Kansas game and Kansas-Stanford game last week. And I bet Kansas wants that game back because Kansas does have a good full court pressure, and they should have used it more on Stanford because Stanford has a big time getting out of the full court pressure. The way Stanford plays defensively in the half court, you don't have to let their defense get set. It's difficult to run off Stanford's misses because Johnny Dawkins drops his guys back instead of trying to attack the offensive glass. That Johnny Dawkins is, of course, the Stanford coach. So what Dayton needs to do more, they need to watch the game between Kansas and Stanford, because Kansas was full court pressuring Stanford, but they didn't do it enough. And I bet if Kansas had that game back, if they can play that game over again, they would full court pressure more, because Stanford has a really hard time in getting out the full court pressure, and they really don't have like a true point guard. They have guards, they have like shooting guards, but it's not really a true point guard who can break down the full court pressure, and they have a hard time. So that's what Dayton needs to do. Dayton needs to spread out to full court pressure, get into Stanford, and cause turnover so they can get easy buckets. And if Dayton does that, it will be a blowout, and Stanford will not have a chance. But if I'm Stanford and I'm looking at Dayton's biggest weakness, is that Dayton doesn't have a rim protector. So if I'm Stanford, Stanford's got to just go straight to the bucket. Go straight to the basket. Don't be afraid. Create the contact and get to the free throw line, because Dayton does not have a rim protector. They have good size on the perimeter, Dayton. They have good, like, big guards, but they don't have a big, like, a big man inside that protects the rim. As a team, they only average 2.5 blocks per game, which is okay, but is not as good as other teams that are still left in the tournament. So if I'm Stanford, they got to, you know, get their guards, set the screen, get by the guards got to get by their defenders and then take it straight to the basket and then cause, and they could either they're going to get the bat, they're going to make the layup, or they're going to get fouled and get two shots at the free throw line, and then those fouls will add up, and then they'll get to the into the bonus and the double bonus. So it's going to be crazy to see. And Stanford also, the guards don't also have to get by their defenders. They can also, you know, set, post it up, give it to their big man inside, and exploit that Dayton doesn't have a rim protector. So I want to go with Stanford, but I still feel like Dayton, they're gonna full court pressure the Stanford, and that will like kind of, it won't neglect that they don't have a rim protector, but it will like, it's not a big of a weakness as pressuring Stanford full court and causing turnover. So I do expect Dayton to win this game today. Again, they play at 4:15 later today, so that's the first game of the Sweet 16. So I expect Dayton to win, but it's going to be a very close game like all of the games have been throughout this tournament. So expect Dayton to beat Stanford and move on to the Elite Eight. Next game is the Baylor versus Wisconsin. So Wisconsin got here by beating American by 40 points in the first round, and then they beat Oregon in the second round, 85-77. Baylor defeated Nebraska in the first round, and then they upsetted Creighton by 30 points. They just, even though everyone kind of expected it, Creighton wasn't, they got a higher seed than they deserved. So, and that showed there, because Baylor was a way better team. They beat them 85-55. They beat Creighton. So Baylor and Wisconsin. Baylor's biggest weakness is their three-point defense. They play a lot of zone, and they give up good looks from the three-point line. Baylor's opponents make 35.2% of their threes. And Nebraska and Creighton did not take advantage of that, the two opponents that Baylor defeated, because they shot a combining 9-45 from the three-point line. So you got to shoot, and I think Wisconsin has some good shooters on their team. So Baylor does not, they play a lot of zone. So what Wisconsin's got to do is, you know, pass the ball around, move it around quick. You know, they can't just be standing around holding the ball and not doing anything. And then, you know, swing in around the perimeter a couple of times, and then out of nowhere hit them with a skip pass. And then you get a nice open three, a good three. They get a good three-point look, and, you know, they got to take advantage of that. They got to hit their threes. It's going to end up like how Creighton did. Creighton, on paper, was a terrible matchup for the Baylor zone. They didn't shoot the ball as well. So that's what Wisconsin's got to do. Wisconsin's got to take advantage of Baylor playing a lot of zone, and they've got to make their three-point shots, which I expect them to do, because I expect Wisconsin to win. Even though Baylor's a great defensive team, they play good interior defense, but they don't play as well of a three-point defense. So Wisconsin's got to take advantage of that, of the Baylor zone, and they got to knock down their threes. Wisconsin's biggest weakness, like how Baylor's biggest weakness on defense is their three-point defense, Wisconsin's biggest weakness is their interior defense. The Badgers' two-point defense, which they give up 46.1% shots, is the worst it has been since 2009. And that team back in 2009 was 20-13 and was a number 12 seed. Well, Wisconsin is a 2 seed. But the main difference between these two teams is that they can't stop anyone at the rim. Their center, Frank Kaminsky. He has the size, 7 foot, but he's not the great defender. Wisconsin's opponents has shot 60% at the basket compared to 54% last season. So Baylor's got to just throw it inside. They got to give it to their big man and let him go to work. And then, even though he's not a great defender in Frank Kaminsky, he's 7 foot, and you know, having a center 7 footer on your team is very valuable. No matter what he can do, having a 7 footer is a great asset to have on your team. So what Baylor's got to do is, you know, still throw it inside, even though he's 7 foot. He's not a great interior defender, like I've said. And you just go at him, and hopefully you get some foul, you get some calls, get some fortunate calls, and then he'll get in foul trouble, and then that means Wisconsin has to go to the bench. So that's what Baylor's got to do. They've got to get Kaminsky into foul trouble, and just wear him down inside. If Baylor wants to upset Wisconsin, what they got to do is, you know, wear down Wisconsin inside. They already know they're not great interior defenders, so that's gonna be an interesting matchup. You're gonna see a lot of Wisconsin shooting a lot of threes, and then you're gonna see Baylor going inside a lot. So we'll see what happens, but I do expect, even though Baylor's a very tough matchup, I do expect Wisconsin to win. Next game today is San Diego State and Arizona. So how Arizona got to the Sweet 16, they defeated Weber State. Not convincingly, they only beat them by 9, but they defeated Weber State 68-59. Then in the second round, they defeated Gonzaga convincingly, 84-61. So Arizona is there. And then San Diego State got here by defeating a tough New Mexico State team. They beat them 73-69. And then they defeated the North Dakota State 63-44. So to me, besides the Florida-UCLA matchup that's later today, Arizona-San Diego State is going to be the best game today. It's going to be the best game today. They're very similar, and it's going to be go down to the wire. And Arizona's biggest weakness, to believe it or not, is their free throw shooting. The Wildcats have only shot 65.5% at the line, and Eric Gordon, their star freshman, is the worst, shooting below 50% at 43%. In their last three losses, Arizona, they've shot 50.8% at the line. And as a number one seed and as a team favorite as a team that is one of the favorites to win the national championship, you can't be a horrible free throw shooting team, because this is the time, the Sweet 16 from now, these are the times games are going to get close, and they're going to get in double bonuses and bonuses, one and ones. And you got to hit your free throws, because if not, the other team is going to just foul you on purpose, going to foul Eric Gordon. Aaron Gordon gets a lot of playing time. He's a star freshman player. So they're going to foul him and have him beat them at the line. So Sandy, watch, just check. If the game's close at the end with like 2 minutes left, just see if San Diego State starts fouling on purpose, intentionally fouling, or not giving up easy buckets, and they just foul them and have them shoot at the free throw line, because Arizona is a very, very bad team at the free throw line. They're a horrible free throw shooting team. So just watch if San Diego State's intentionally fouled. I wouldn't be surprised that they do, because Arizona does not shoot good at the free throw line. And then San Diego State's biggest weakness is scoring when Xavier Thames is off the floor. Xavier Thames is their best scorer, their best player on San Diego State. And the Aztecs are extremely, extremely reliant on Thames on the offensive end. Their four losses have come in four of Thames' most inefficient games. In those four games, he averaged only 13.5 points on 15.8 shots per game. So Tames, he's a really good. He's really good at creating a shot. His shot at the dribble, and then the Aztecs, San Diego State, they run him off a lot of ball screens, so he can get open shots, or he can either drive to the basket and do what he has to do. But a shot coming from any other Aztec is always better. Is better than the shot from Tames. So expect Arizona to double Xavier Tames off the ball screen, and then having the guy setting the screen, which is most likely going to be a big man, so he's probably in the perimeter, so they're going to double Tame so he doesn't get the ball, and then they're going to have to throw it to the big man, which is going to just make San Diego State just their offensive game is just gonna it's gonna throw off their offensive plan and their offensive game plan. So expect Arizona to double Xavier Tames off the ball screens, and also might even sending a double team, like if he's in the post or if he's in the corner somewhere. So expect Arizona to spend a lot of time on Xavier Tames, just watching him and not having him get the ball, because that's San Diego State's biggest weakness. He's their best scorer and their best player, so expect that to happen. And then the last game today is also the next best game is going to be Florida and Arizona. I mean, and UCLA, excuse me. I'm sorry. Florida and UCLA. And UCLA has been looking good. UCLA has been looking good. Let's see how they got to the Sweet 16. They beat Tulsa in the first round, 76-59. And then they defeated Stephen F. Austin, who was the big underdog who defeated VCU. And they UCLA defeated them 77-60. So UCLA hasn't had a really tough test, I should say, to get to the Sweet 16. But they're still a very good team. You know, the Pac-12 had 6 or 7 teams get entered into the March Madness. So they've played against... They've defeated, actually, Arizona earlier in the year. So UCLA is still a good team that Florida needs to be worried about. And then Florida, the number one overall seed, they defeated Albany in the first round, 67-55, which was kind of not convincing because Albany was tied with Florida with, like, 10 minutes to go in the second half. So Florida, there was a lot of critics out there on Florida. And then also... They defeated Pittsburgh in the second round, 61-45. So Florida's the favorite to win it all. That's a lot of experts have taken Florida to beat UCLA. So Florida, one of Florida's biggest weaknesses, what UCLA's got to do if they want to pull off the big upset, is their perimeter shooting. That's Florida's biggest weakness, is their perimeter shooting. Michael Frazier makes 44.5% of his threes, and then Scotty Wilbekin, he makes 39.7%. But after those two, the Gators do not have another player with at least 10 attempts over 32% from their perimeter. So that's the key to beating Florida. They got to limit, UCLA has to limit Michael Frazier and Scotty Wilbekin. Those are Florida's two best players, and they've got to limit them. They got to make Scotty Wilbekin pass it to other players besides Michael Frazier, and have the other players, the unknown players that no one really talks about, beat them. They can't have these two guys and Frazier and Wilbekin beat them. So expect UCLA to, you know, key on these two guys, because Frazier and Wilbekin are the majority of Florida's offense. And once Frazier and Wilbekin start get going, then you see the whole team get better. So they got to make bad players. UCLA's got to make bad players beat them and not Frazier and Wilbekin. And UCLA's biggest weakness is their perimeter defense, which is defeats the purpose, because that's why I expect Florida to win, because UCLA's perimeter defense is just horrible. Like Wilbekin, he's a slashing guard who likes to get to the bucket, who can also pull up and shoot. So they're going to love playing the Bruins, because the Bruins have a bad perimeter defense. So, like, for example, let's like let's take a look at some of the performances put up against the Bruins by perimeter scores this year. Missouri's Jabari Brown. Missouri's Jabari Brown, Jordan Clarkson, and Ernest Ross, they all combined to score 63 points in an upset win earlier in the year. Nick Johnson scored 22 points in the first meeting between UCLA and Arizona. Stanford's Chanson Randall had 26 points in Stanford's only win against UCLA. And then Oregon's Joseph Young averaged 26.7 points in three games against UCLA. So UCLA's perimeter defense is bad, is horrible, I should say. So expect Florida and Scotty Wilbekin and Michael Frazier to take advantage of that horrible perimeter defense. So Florida's going to win. Arizona's going to win. Dayton's going to beat Stanford, and then expect Wisconsin to beat Baylor. So I'm not, even though I'm giving you my predictions, doesn't mean you don't have to watch. And believe me, you can go and check. Watch the games. They're going to be four great games. I see all of them going to the end. Close at the... So they're going to be four great games. When we come back, we'll be talking about how James Harden is surging at the right time and putting his team, the Houston Rockets, in a good place to contend for an NBA championship. This is Ball is Live, and we'll be back after this break.
Apart inside. Was it something I said or something I did? Did my words not come out right? Though I tried not to hurt you, though I tried, but I guess that's why they say every rose has its thorn. Just like every night has its dawn. Just like every cowboy sings a sad song. Every rose has its thorn. She said, love's a game of easy come and easy go. But I wonder, does he know? Has he ever been like this? And I know that you would be here right now if I could have let you know somehow. I guess every rose has its thorn. Just like every night has its dawn. Just like every cowboy sings a sad song. Every rose has its thorn. Though it's been a while now, I can still feel so much pain, like the knife that cuts
Welcome back to Ball is Life. Quick reminder here, just to let you guys know, there's a live broadcast on March 31st at 7 p.m., the Malba Bills Award for Diversity Gala. So tune into radio.dominican.edu and check that out. Again, the Malba Bills Award for Diversity Gala is March 31st at 7 p.m. only on radio.dominican.edu. So let's go back to talk about now. NBA is James Harden and him catching fire at the perfect time for his surging Houston Rockets team. Lately, he's just been a man on a mission. Since the All-Star break, he laced up his sprinting shoes and has launched the Rockets up in the Western Conference standings. Harden has picked up a pair of Player of the Week awards during this stretch since the All-Star break. And the Rockets have came off 4 straight victories and have won 12 out of 17 since the All-Star break. So they're the hottest team right now in the league. And he's proving it that he's catching fire, because post All-Star breaks, he's been averaging 27.6 points per game. He's been shooting 50% from the field, 45% from three, and he's had averaged close to 7 assists. So he is a man on a mission, and you know, he is the star player on the Houston Rockets. Many people would say, oh, you know, that's Dwight Howard's team. Well, it's not. They are incorrect, because this is James Harden's team. At the end of the game, if it's a close game, Dwight Howard is not getting the ball. James Harden is getting the ball. So he's surging at the right time. His post All-Star efficiency is staggering. Between Kevin Durant, Carmelo Anthony, Kevin Love, and LeBron James, James Harden leads all of them in three-point percentage. He averages 3 made three-point field goals a game. He shoots 85.3% from the free throw, and he has a 9.2 point differential over LeBron James during this stretch between the All-Star game and now. He's had 5 double-doubles in his last 17 outings. 5 double-doubles. So that means he's scoring points, racking up assists, or he's either scoring points and racking up rebounds or steals. So he's put this team, the Houston Rockets, on his back, and he's leading them to one of the best records in the Western Conference. So they're a team to watch. No one's going to want to play the Houston Rockets in the playoffs right now. No one. No one wants to see them. Right now, they are fourth. They're fourth in the Western Conference. They are behind the Clippers, Oklahoma City Thunder, and San Antonio. But they're fourth. They're 48-22. They're still a game behind the Clippers, so they can get that 3 seed. But projected right now, they'd be playing Portland Trailblazers. And if Houston went against Portland, no offense to Portland, but I feel Houston would sweep them in the first round. I feel that Houston overpowers them, Portland. So Houston is a team everyone should be watching, and I'm pretty sure they are watching. And it's because of this man right here, James Harden. James Harden, he's had 4 games with 20-plus points and 10-plus assists, and the other a masterful. He had a 41-point, 10-rebound performance. He scored at least 25 points 11 different times, poured in 30 or more in 7 different games, and twice dropped the 40-point mark. He's even made history. James Harden became the first on Saturday, he became the first player to ever have at least 35 points and 10 assists in less than 30 minutes. Less than 30 minutes. He had 37 points and 11 assists in less than 30 minutes. That's crazy. That's like Michael Jordan numbers right there. So, and, you know, even though he's making a run for the MVP award right now. So, and you can, even though I don't expect him to win it, it's either between LeBron James or Kevin Durant. But James Harden is making, even though Houston was already considered a threat, but they're even a bigger threat now with the way he's playing. And then with the way he's playing, it also, his teammates see it, so they play better. So they're just firing on all cylinders right now. They're the hottest team in the league besides the Indiana Pacers. But Houston is the hottest team in the league. They're the hottest team in the Western Conference. Well, no, I don't think so. Not Western Conference. The Spurs have a 15-game winning streak, but that's the Spurs. So, and Houston's making a big run, big push, showing everyone and saying that, you know, we deserve to be feared and we deserve some respect, and people should start considering us favorites to win the title. So we'll see what happens. And they have, the Rockets have one of the NBA's most greatest like attacks as long as Harden is on the floor. With him, their offense averages 110 points per game. No, 110 points per 100 possessions. Well clear of the Miami Heat. They, without him, you know, okay, with James Harden on the floor, they have 109.5 offensive rating. Without him, that number falls to 102.8, which would just rank just 20th overall. So he means a lot. So their offense goes from number one with him on the court, and then when he's off the court, they drop all the way down to 20, which is below average. That's not even half. So he makes the game easier for players around him. Like, that's, you know, like how LeBron makes the game easier for the Miami Heat, or when Kobe, when he was healthy, he made the game easier for the Los Angeles Lakers. And then we can go back to Jordan, when he made the game easier for like Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman, Steve Kerr. And then we can even go back to the 80s, where Magic Johnson made the game easier for, you know, guys like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Michael Cooper, James Worthy. So James Harden's on that level, or he's near close. He's close to that level, because he makes the game easier for Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard doesn't have to score 20 points and grab 15 rebounds a game, which Dwight Howard can do easily. He should do easily, but Dwight Howard doesn't have to do that. There's not as much pressure on Dwight Howard as there was back when he was with the Los Angeles Lakers, or with even with Orlando Magic. Dwight Howard was the guy with those two teams, and he didn't have a lot of help, especially last year when Kobe went down, Gasol was hurt for a little bit, and Steve Nash was hurt for most of the season. So Dwight Howard wasn't the man. But he doesn't have to be the guy here in Houston, because James Harden is that guy. James Harden is the guy that will lead the team in scoring, and he's the leader. So it makes the game much easier for Dwight Howard. Chandler Parsons, he doesn't have to score a lot. Chandler Parsons can, you know, just hang around the perimeter and get his open three-point shots. Patrick Beverley, the starting point guard for the Houston Rockets, it makes the game easier for him. He can do what he has to do. So because James Harden takes care of that, you know, the big role, the being the guy and the team leader, the other guys, it's his supporting cast, like Dwight Howard, Chandler Parsons, Patrick Beverley, Jeremy Lin, the list goes on, Amora Sheik, Terrence Jones. It makes the game easier for them, so they just got to do what they're supposed to do, what their role is to do. So James Harden does make it easier for them. So And they're a team that should be feared because they're playing at elite level right now. Elite level. They're playing like it's the NBA playoffs. They're just beating teams left and right. So if I was the San Antonio Spurs or the Los Angeles Clippers, Oklahoma City Thunder, I would be afraid. I would be very worried about the Houston Rockets because, again, they've won 12 of 17 since the All-Star break. They've won 4 in a row. James Harden's playing like an MVP candidate right now, and it looks like he's not about to cool down for a while. So, and then the playoffs are right around the corner, so they're getting hot at the right time. He's playing the best basketball at the right time. And, you know, these other teams are kind of struggling. Like, Miami has been struggling lately. Indiana's been struggling lately. The Clippers have been struggling lately. Like, I think a couple nights ago, Chris Paul had one of his worst shooting performances in Clipper history. So you see these top contending teams struggling and cooling off. They were hot in the beginning of the year. They were playing on all cylinders in the beginning of the year, and now they've cooled down and they've been playing as well as they should be. So the Rockets are getting hot at the right time, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens because the West is so competitive. There's just so many teams that either one of those 8 teams can come out and represent the West in the NBA Finals. It's crazy. There's between the 8 teams right now in the playoffs, or 9 teams, I say, because 2 teams are tied. Dallas and Phoenix are tied for that last spot. But Phoenix holds the tiebreaker, so technically they're the 8 seed. But between these 9 teams, 12 and a half games separate the bottom team from the top team. Not like in the East, where 20 games separate the top team from the bottom team. So the Western Conference is very competitive, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens and who comes out, because any of these 8 teams can represent the West in the NBA Finals and put on a good performance in the NBA Finals. But I'm not saying, you know, the Phoenix Suns are going to go all the way to the NBA Finals, because I don't see that happening. But I'm just saying it's very competitive in the West, and the way Houston's playing right now, they're playing like the best team in the Western Conference, even though their record doesn't show that. But they are right now. Since the All-Star break, they've been the best team in the West with a 12-5 record. James Harden has been setting records. So it's going to be interesting to see, but I'm going to be tuning in and watching it. I'm going to keep my eye on it, and I'm going to enjoy it because it's great basketball, and I love great basketball. Not like it's playoff time, you know. It's March Madness. I'm ready. It's great. So we'll see what happens. So we're going to take a quick break right now. When we get back, we'll talk about the great game that was played last night between the Miami Heat and Indiana Pacers, and how the Heat's loss shows that maybe it's Indiana's time to go to the finals and not Miami. And let's see, and we'll talk about if Miami can recover from this loss. So we'll be back. This is Ball's Life. I am Jay Smoove, and come back with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back to Balls Life. I am Jay Smooth. Just in, some breaking news considering regarding Syracuse freshman point guard Tyler Ennis. According to ESPN, he will be entering the NBA draft. So he had a solid regular season campaign. So 1 year, so one and done. Tyler Ennis of Syracuse, according to ESPN, will leave for the NBA. ESPN's Chad Ford ranks him as the 9th best player in the draft and the 3rd best point guard in the draft. So Tyler Ennis, he should have a great NBA career. So we'll see who he gets drafted by later in the draft back in June. So Tyler Ennis leaving Syracuse to enter the NBA. And on the note of college basketball, again, if you missed it, the Sweet 16 does tip off today. So we've got four great games at 4:15 p.m. You've got Dayton playing Stanford at 4:47 p.m. Baylor will play Wisconsin 6:45 p.m. There will be the number one seed in the tournament, Florida, will play UCLA. And at 7:17 p.m., it will be Arizona playing San Diego State. So four great games. Tune in to watch them. Sweet 16 tips off today. So let's get back to the pros. There was a big game last night. Everyone was watching it. It was the Miami Heat and the Indiana Pacers. Two best teams in the Eastern Conference. Two of the best teams in the NBA, period. And coming into the game, the Indiana Pacers had a 2-game lead over Miami for the number one spot in the Eastern Conference. And Indiana was at home, and they took care of business. They defeated Miami 84-83. There was a lot of emotion in this game, a lot of passion, a lot of intensity. There were some hard fouls. LeBron, he started bleeding out of his nose. LeBron elbowed Roy Hibbert in the face, so Roy Hibbert had to leave. Lance Stephenson of the Indiana Pacers, he got ejected for taunting Dwayne Wade. So these two teams do not like each other at all. It's great. It's like back in the 90s when it was the New York Knicks and the Indiana Pacers. This is just hatred between the two teams. So Pacers won 84-83. Stats on this game. LeBron James, he had 38 points, 5 assists, 8 rebounds. Chris Bosh only had 8 points. Had a horrible shooting performance. So did Mario Chalmers, who was 2 from 10 from the field. Dwayne Wade was 6-11 from the field with 15 points. Then Indiana Pacers, David West had 13 points. Paul George had 23 points with 8 rebounds, 4 assists. Roy Hibbert, 21 points, 4 rebounds. So it was a great game. And if everyone's expectations come true, which is Indiana and Miami in the Eastern Conference Finals, it's most likely going to happen that way. I don't see any other team coming close to these two teams in the East, because you've got teams like Toronto, Chicago, Brooklyn, Washington. Even though, actually, let's get back to Brooklyn. Brooklyn will be real interesting because they have a lot of veterans. They have a star-studded lineup. And Deron Williams, Paul Pierce, Joe Johnson, Brook Lopez, Kevin Garnett, and then they got, you know, Marcus Thornton coming off the bench. So Brooklyn can be a team to watch, but other than Brooklyn, you got Atlanta, the Atlanta Hawks, Charlotte Bobcats, Washington Wizards, who's a young team that's not ready to make a deep run. Even another team also, Brooklyn and Chicago, the Bulls, even though Derrick Rose is out, they always play good under Tom Thibodeau. Toronto, I think they're just too young. They're not mature enough to make a deep run. They probably could get out of the first round, but once they get into the second round, I don't, you know, they're either going to have to play Miami or, so I don't see Toronto making a deep run. But Chicago and Brooklyn are teams to watch. But back to Miami and Indiana. These are the two best teams in the Eastern Conference, two of the best teams in the league. And they showed it last night. It was, you could feel the intensity. You can see the, like, you can see Indiana. They treated it like it was a playoff game, like it was an NBA Finals game. That's how much in, like, this game means to both of these teams. And it was just a late regular season game, but it was much more than that because these two teams, you know, they're fighting for the number one spot in the Eastern Conference. They're fighting to be the best team, the best record in the NBA. And these teams do not like each other. They really don't. There's really hatred between these two teams. There's always a conflict between Lance Stephenson and Dwayne Wade. Those guys got to guard each other, and they don't like each other. You can tell they don't like each other. Paul George, you know, he wants to be the alpha male of the East, but of the league, and, you know, he goes head-to-head with LeBron James. He dunked on LeBron James. He had a nice dunk on him. So it's interesting. And then what I took from the game last night was Indiana looks really good. And I think if Indiana has the best, if they finish the season with the best record in the East and they have home court advantage throughout the playoffs, and they got that game 7 in Indiana, I think they can beat Miami. They've got three players. Their core, their top three players in Paul George, David West, and Roy Hibbert. And then you add in Lance Stephenson, and you got George Hill, he's not a great point guard, but he's a good game managing point guard. You got, you know, Luis Scola. He's a veteran coming out of the bench. He's been there before. He's been in the playoffs. He's made a run, like, with the Houston Rockets. They made a, you know, back when they had Yao Ming and Ron Artest. They made a deep run in the playoffs, so he's been there. And then they also got Evan Turner, who they got in the trade deadline. He's an up-and-coming player, a young player. He had 8 points last night. You know, he did have a bad shooting performance. He went 4 from 10 from the field. But he is a good young player who can give you 10 to 15 points a night. So, and then again, Paul George, Roy Hibbert, and David West, they combined for 57 points last night out of 84. And then, you know, they also play great defense. Frank Vogel, he's very defensive minded, so they always play great defense. And I, you know, If the Miami Heat have games like this, like where Chris Bosh shoots 3 from 11 from the field, 2 from 6 from 3, and only ending up with 8 points, and then, you know, Dwayne Wade, he's not the same player. He's getting up there in age. He's older. He's not going to give you 20 points a game. He did have 15, but I can see I believe Indiana will, Miami and Indiana do end up playing each other in the Eastern Conference. I see Indiana defeating the Heat in a 7-game series. Indiana has all the ingredients to come out of the East and compete for an NBA and to play for an NBA championship. And I kind of like them as my NBA favorite, to be honest, right now. I really do. I think they can win. They're my favorites to win it because they're just, even though, you know, in the West you got San Antonio, Oklahoma City, Houston, and the Clippers. Or, you know, even the one of those teams with the lower season, Golden State, Memphis, Dallas. I think Indiana is the favorite to win it all right now. Because I believe if they defeat Miami in the playoffs, Indiana will win the NBA championship. And then also what I took from this game is, what happened to Miami? I don't know if it was a bad game or what, but it was just like, again, Chris Bosh finished with 8 points. You know, they had to start Greg Oden because Shane Battier or Beasley did not play. coach's decision. I don't know why they didn't play, but in like Greg Oden didn't finish with 2 points. Mario Chalmers shot 2 from 10 from the field, 0 from 3 from the three from the perimeter, and he ended with 5 points. It looks like Miami, they're relying on LeBron James too much. And it kind of brings up memories of when LeBron's last days in Cleveland, where he didn't have a really great supporting cast around him. You know, he had guys like Mo Williams, Antoine Jameson, Anderson Varejao. And it looks like Cleveland, the Cavs, they used to like rely on him a lot. And that's why, you know, they lost to Orlando in the Eastern Conference Finals that one year. And Orlando went to the finals. Or then they lost to the Boston Celtics multiple times. That last playoff series of LeBron as a Cav, they lost to Boston. And that's watching the Heat now brings up memories of him as a Cleveland Cavalier. Because he had 38 points, shot 11 and 19 from the field. 2 from 6 for 3. 14 out of 15. He was getting to the free throw line. He had 14 from 15 from the free throw line. 8 rebounds. 5 assists. He almost had a triple-double. He did have 6 turnovers, though. That's not good. But Miami's got to step up. And they really don't have great bench production. You know, Rashard Lewis didn't do well. Chris Birdman Anderson. He's not an offensive threat. He's a guy that gets you rebounds and blocks. He's not a good offensive threat. Udonis Haslam, not an offensive threat. Tony Douglas, Norris Cole. So we'll see what happens. We will. But Indiana's my favorite to win it all. They look like they are the best team in the East right now. As of today, they are the best team in the East. So, and they just have great teammate chemistry. So, Indiana has the upper hand on Miami right now. They've got the better record right now. They're in line to get home court advantage throughout the playoffs. And they match up great with any team in the Western Conference. So, Indiana's my favorite to win it all. Even though, you know, Houston's on their winning streak. San Antonio's on their winning streak. But I like what Indiana has in their starting five. In Roy Hibbert, Paul George, David West, Lance Stephenson. And then, you know, you throw in Evan Turner there off the bench. So keep an eye on Indiana because they are my favorites to win it all this year. So, recap, if you tuned in late, I've talked about, you know, the starting of the Sweet 16 today. There's 4 games today and then 4 games tomorrow. Talked about each team's weaknesses that plays today for the Sweet 16. Also, after that, I talked about how James Harden is catching fire right now at the right time, and he's surging the Houston Rockets to be a legitimate contender in the Western Conference. And then also talked about Miami and how they're struggling right now, and Indiana and how they are my favorites to win the NBA championship in June. Thank you again for another great show. Thank you for tuning in. This is Jay Smoove, and thank you for listening to Ball is Life. I will see you again next Thursday.
Black and white, there was nothing.